The Jericho Network on Westwood One.
Thanks for downloading this show from PC One. Before we get rolling, here's a word from one of the folks who helped bring you this podcast.
It's your last chance to get great holiday savings at Guitar Center. Like a Yamaha portable keyboard, only $79. Add a month of lessons for only $99. Plus the newest and hottest guitars, drums, keys, and more. Exclusive gear you can't get anywhere else. Special financing and gift cards, the perfect present for every musician. So hurry in and find your sound at Guitar Center. Lessons available at select locations only.
Talk is Jericho, baby. Talk is Jericho. Talk is Jericho, mama. Talk is me.
All right, welcome to Talk is Jericho. It is the pod of thunder and rock and roll. And how's this for a unique show? When Ambrose met Hardy. Yeah, Dean Ambrose and Jeff Hardy. And what you're about to hear is basically the first time the two have ever met in person. Hard to believe, but they had never really met or had a conversation before we all sat down to do this podcast. It all started, we were in Cincinnati, and I was in the dressing room talking to Matt Hardy about Jeff and about how he's still as crazy as ever in a good way. And I said, man, I've always told Dean Ambrose that he reminds me of Jeff Hardy. He's very quiet. He chooses his words wisely, but he's super smart, super funny, very creative, great guy. And I told that to Jeff as well. He reminded me a lot of Dean Ambrose. So I said to Matt, it's like, wow, I mean, they remind me so much of each other and they've never even really met. I'd love to have them sit down with a couple microphones on my podcast and just have them meet each other for the first time. When I said that, Jeff came out of the bathroom. I didn't know he was in there. He goes, I'd be down for that. I'm down for that, man. So I was like, cool. And so I went and asked Ambrose. I said, hey, man, I had this idea of getting you and Jeff together in a room to have a discussion for the first time. And he's like, yeah, I'll do that. So that's basically how it all started. So we got together a few weeks ago at Raw in Kansas City. And basically, it was set up and done in a couple conversations, a couple texts. Dean showed up. Jeff showed up. We went into a back room, and I turned the microphones on, and here we go. So the three of us had a great conversation, very varied conversation, talking about the broken universe, the final deletion with Jeff, and, of course, with Matt, how Dean and I got a potted plant over in an angle last year. Then we're talking about ghosts, Bigfoot, crop circles, and, of course, music. Jeff Hardy, finally, his record is coming out. It's called Peroxygen. Yeah, Peroxygen. It's Peroxwhy ?GEN, classic Jeff Hardy. And they're about to release their new album July 17th. And you can find that. We'll let you know where you can find that. Be sure to stick around to the end of the show because Jeff is going to give the new single Revived a spin right here on Talk is Jericho. It's the debut of Revived. You'll be among the first to hear it. That record comes out July 17th. I'll let you know at the end of the show where you can pick that up. But before we get to when Ambrose met Hardy, I want to tell you there's still a couple of general admission tickets left to my spoken word show, The Words of Jericho, June 8th at Vicker Street in Dublin. Like very few. This is not some kind of a sell or sales pitch, business pitch. What do you call it? Sales pitch. I think there's less than like 50 tickets left. So if you want to come hang out with us, please get those. June 7th in Belfast, already sold out. But if you're in Dublin, there's still a chance. You can get tickets at Ticketmaster.ie. There's also another Words of Jericho live show lined up August 25th in Winnipeg at the Club Regent Event Center. I'm from Winnipeg, you idiot. Tickets are on sale at Ticketmaster.com, so check that out as well. And of course, this leg of the Fozzy Judas Rising tour is just about finished, but it's such a great time. So many killer shows on this run. Great pairing with King and Sons of Texas. We'd love to do it again. It's funny because like everything has just gone through the roof since Judas is becoming a hit. It's at 3.7 million on YouTube now. Still top three or four on the iTunes charts. I mean, earlier in the week, it was Inter Sandman, Judas one, and Nothing Else Matters. I was like, man, those Metallica guys are really showing off. They're getting on my nerves. But if you've checked out the video, we thank you. If you've bought the single on iTunes, we thank you. If you haven't bought it, do it. Keep the momentum rolling because the more times you guys buy that single on iTunes, the more chance we have to get more radio play and move up the charts on rock radio, which is very important, especially with Judas. It needs to be top 10, let's be honest. But it has some great shows. I mean, We had like a very small pre-sales for Joliet and then walked on stage at the Forge, and the place was packed, sold out, well, close to sold out, not quite sold out, but it was packed. And it's like it's been happening every single night. It happened the night before that when we were in Flint, Michigan, last week in Asbury Park and Lancaster, and so many great shows. And we're getting ready to wind down the tour, this leg of the tour, Rocklahoma today in Pryor, Oklahoma. Then we're doing San Antonio, River City Rock Fest, both of those with Def Leppard headlining. Then we bring it all to a close May 28th on Sunday at the BFD in Dallas. Stone Sour headlines that one. So great stuff coming up. It's a great time to be in Fozzy. Main stage at Download June 11th. Hosting the Metal Hammer Golden Gods Awards June 12th at the O2 in London. 13th in Milton Keynes. Possible other secret gig on the 14th maybe. Then we're doing the Pain in the Grass Festival in Seattle on June 24th. A lot more dates getting added as we finish up the album Judas, with the single Judas just going through the roof, becoming a viral hit, and it's going to become our biggest charting song to date. So go check it out, support it if you can. If you haven't heard it, I'm going to play it for you now. This is our biggest hit ever. It's Judas by Fozzy on Talk Is Jericho.
On the inside, you are innocence personified, and I will track you down and sell you out. Run away. I am cold like December snow. I have carved out this soul made of stone, and I will drag. By demons I fight. What?
Still finishing up the new Fozzy record, putting the finishing touches on that. Have it out in the fall. September is the target date. Lots coming for Fozzy. Lots of momentum. Let's keep it going. And let's keep it going right here on TIJ when Ambrose met Hardy for the first time right here on this podcast. We're going to talk about another WWE Hall of Famer first, though, that Jeff Hardy is actually known for years. He has met this guy. Talking about DDP and DDP Yoga, Diamond Dallas Page. We're all doing DDP Yoga on this Fozzy tour. It's helping us all to stay healthy, loose, and limber on the road. Helping my singing, because DDP Yoga strengthens the core. Singing is all about the core, pushing from the diaphragm. All of that is strengthened because of DDP Yoga. I'm noticing it on stage. The best vocal performances of my career. Noticed it in the studio when I was recording vocals for the new Fozzy record. A lot of people commenting how much they like the vocals on Judas. I do a lot of credit for that to DDP Yoga. DDP Yoga can help you get in shape and live a healthier life as well. Easier now than it ever was before, thanks to the DDP Yoga Now app. That's what I'm using. Rich Ward's using it. Billy Gray. The app lets you do the workouts wherever and whenever you want. I'm doing it backstage at the venue, in the dress room, on the bus, in my hotel room. I still use the DVDs, though, sometimes, just the way I am. But you can open up the app and get to work, because DDPY is a great program for anyone, any age, any skill level. So much more than just a workout. It's a healthier way to live, okay? And Diamond Dallas Page has made it so easy for you to get aboard his life-changing program. Take advantage of this tremendous deal that Dallas is offering. He's giving you 20% off the DDP Yoga Now app and all DDPY merch and swag. Just go to ddpyoga.com/Jericho. Bunch of new workouts on the app. The ability to do live workouts from the DDP Yoga Performance Center. He's got nutrition tips, recipes, tools to help you track your progress. And like I said, Dallas is offering you this incredible deal on DDPY. Get 20% off the DDP Yoga Now app and all DDPY related merch. Just go to ddpyoga.com/Jericho. That's all you got to do to take advantage of this tremendous deal. ddpyoga.com/Jericho. That's ddpyoga.com/Jericho. Go check it out now. Get in the best physical and mental shape of your life and do it right now.
Hey, I'm Emmanuel Acho, host of Beyond the Film Room, where we take the muzzle off the mouths of premier athletes. Every Thursday, join me and your favorite sports figures as we tackle the uncharted topic of sport and discuss the far-reaching impact outside of the stadium itself. Download episodes every Thursday at PodcastOne.com, the Podcast One app, or subscribe at iTunes.
Talk is Jericho.
So I had this idea, because I've said for years, when I first met Ambrose, we worked together quite a bit last year. It was a great experience. But I do you remember me saying you remind me of Jeff Hardy?
Ronnie's telling me that all the time, actually. And I've we've never crossed paths and never met. But I get that actually quite a bit.
Which is so rare in the business after you guys have both been around for, you know, 15, 20 years, whatever, is to never have actually met each other. But I said this the other day to you, Jeff, that you guys are very kind of quiet guys, a little bit kind of, I don't know if it's outwardly shy, but super intelligent, super smart, and when you start rolling, hilarious guys too. And I said the other day to you, like, man, you remind me of Ambrose. I'd love to put you guys in a room and, like, have you meet each other on camera, so to speak. You're like, all right, let's do it.
Yeah, for sure. I've heard it so much. Like, man, if you ever go back to the WWE, man, I got to see you and Dean Ambrose, man. That'd be the matchup of the century, you know. So I've heard it a lot, too, the comparison.
Just from a personality standpoint, you know, as well. And it was funny, too, because when I was talking to Matt about it, and it was one of those things where I didn't know you were in the bathroom, in the dressing room.
Right, I was on the toilet. Yeah.
I was like, yeah. I'd love to get Decent. Dean and Hardy, and you come out, you're like, yeah, I'd like to do that. I was like, well, I'm glad I didn't call you an asshole or something.
I know, I was waiting on it, but I was still going, hey, I heard you guys, man. It's all good.
That could be a bad idea. Like, hey, you guys remind me of each other because you're both quiet. You know what we should do? An audio podcast.
Right. Yeah, that's what someone suggested. It could be a disaster. I said, no, it won't be. Because once they start rolling, they go. But that is the case. It's like, and it's hard. So you've never crossed paths anywhere.
Not to my knowledge.
Yeah, mine either. Yeah, if we did, I forgot it. But yeah, I'm pretty sure we haven't.
I met Matt once or twice, like on an indie show or something. But
because Jeff, you never worked like Ring of Honor or anything like that, did you?
Not until this past March was my first. Well, yeah, years ago when they first started, it was Ring of Horror at the time.
Ring of what?
Because Willow came out, and then Willow took off his mask and it was Jeff Hardy back in the conflicted days, extremely conflicted days, and it was a disaster. I mean, they booed the shit out of me. And
so conflicted, is that kind of like talking to Jeff Hardy like lost years? So
basically, conflicted, yeah. And but then we returned at that Manhattan Mayhem in Manhattan, like with the Bucks, and it was just incredible. So I did it right this time.
Yeah.
And it was a fun month.
So when it was the Ring of Horror, you were the Will of the Wisp.
It was, yeah. And for some reason, I wanted to do the Willow entrance, And but then somehow take up a master in the match and boo. It's
just, you know, not happening.
It was bad. My work wasn't really on point back then either. So,
but were you a fan ever of the Hardys, Dean? I mean, kind of coming into the business and being younger?
Oh, for sure. I mean, they're obviously huge, huge stars, man. Like, so cool. You guys are right back in the mix, man. So that's awesome. Like, everybody knew you guys would be back. I would have thought. If you had asked me, I'd have been like, yeah, Hardy, they'll probably come back, right? Everybody comes back.
Well, and that's the thing. And the funny thing is, too, because we were in Japan together when the broken mat thing. What was the first one called? The first...
The Final Deletion.
Final Deletion.
Yeah.
Deletion.
Oh, yeah. You were the one that showed me that.
You remember that?
Yeah.
You guys were in Japan?
We were in the sumo arena. We had a big show in Japan. And I had it on my computer. And I said, and my rule was you have to watch it from beginning to end. You can't come halfway through. You have to see this whole thing. So I had showings in the dressing room, and Ambrose was one of the guys.
Yeah, I remember that.
All right.
Yeah, let's talk about that.
Yeah, yeah. There we go.
That was fun, man. And the beauty of that whole thing was there was no budget. I had my big symbol that it took me, I don't know, 2 days to make. It was my huge Enigma symbol, and it was like a 12-foot tall cross out in my backyard. And it'd been there for about, I think I built it back in 11 or 12, but I said, yeah, that thing's kind of beat up and it's starting to look bad. Let's destroy it. Let's work it into the finish somehow. And that was the big spot for, I was going to swanton Matt, but he set himself on fire and me as well. And so I took the big bump for the finish of the match. It was all us.
Basically fell off the symbol. You remember that?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
We were and Matt set himself on fire because he's very
quick. Did, yeah, because we are all, like, we're
the thing was on fire, right?
Yeah.
But
right before, so was Matt.
It was the fumes. If you watch it back in slow-mo, man, you can see it, just the fumes, I guess, like, because we were just, man, throwing gas, and I've always been like that, thinking I'm a professional of fire, but, like, far from. But anyway, and it just engulfed him, man. If you watch it back in slow-mo, you can really see it. It was mainly his shoulder and his side a little bit, but then it came up to me, and I took the bump.
How high was that thing?
12, 13 feet.
So you're basically falling 12 feet onto the dirt.
Yeah, it was a big old, and it's funny because when people like criticize and watch it back and you see the reactions, this one guy had the best reaction ever. Like, first of all, my yard was incredible. I did all these designs, and I mean, it's like a full day of weed eating, and it's all these designs, like this big ass puzzle or something. And it's like, wow, is that real, or did they like just.
It almost looks like CGI. Do you remember that, Ambrose? Like,
exactly.
His lawn had all of these designs mowed into it, and
it was gnarly. The whole thing with the drones and the.
And one of the evil.
Well, maybe there weren't drones. I assume there were.
No, there were. Yeah.
But that's
yeah,
the drone, were, yeah. And that was one of Evil Matt's things. He drove his lawnmower through
to scalp the center of the
design. So how do you do that?
I wish I knew. But like getting those drone shots, like I just freehand it, and I did a thing, Itchweed. At Happy Halloween, the Hardy's Halloween deal, and I wrote Happy Halloween and did like two or three pumpkins, and I didn't know. It looked pretty cool from my site, but then when I saw that drone shot, I was like, wow, how did I do that? Mm. It's an incredible medium.
You can't
tell
what it's going to look like from looking down.
No, you can't until you get
like
that drone shot.
It's like a crop circle or something.
Exactly. Yeah. It's very similar. But yeah, this one guy was watching. He was like, what's he got shapes in his yard? I don't know if it's pretty dope. I thought he was going to crack. I was like, well, he's got way too much time on his hands. But like, to me, it's just like painting or writing a song. You know, I'm going to spend some time. It's going to be consuming. But yeah, just for that quick glimpse of it, I was like, yeah, I got that on TV. So
that's pretty impressive, though, do that, knowing what it's going to look like from above. You know,
oh, for sure.
I can't draw at all, man. I'm like stick figures only, man. Yeah, so man. I can't even imagine. Lawnmower and a.
Do you have any type of art that you do, Dean? Like, you know, art is obviously, you know, it can be music, it could be painting, it could be writing, it could be drawing stuff in your lawn.
I mean, nothing like that. I'm like, I have no musical talent whatsoever. Like karaoke after maybe a couple, but I'm not any good. I've blown out my, just from like yelling and years of bad decisions, I have like no vocal cords left, so.
Right.
I have to keep it real low, you know.
You can do that Tom Waits singing. Hey,
yeah, I can't. I can't hit the high notes, you know.
Jeff, you've always been like real artistic. I remember even back in the early 2000s at your house, you had that compound. You've always made these big giant statues and all of these, like, was it tin foil? What were they called? Aluminummies?
Aluminummies, yeah. They were the
aluminummies. Tell Ambrose what an aluminummy is.
It started with, I'd make these action figures out of foil, but then I started to get real crazy, and I would duct tape all these plastic bottles, whether it be a Pepsi, a 2-liter bottle, or a milk jug or something would be the head. I would just see these visions, and I started building some huge things, man, like... And you remember pictures of them. I mean, some of them, it started life size, but then I went beyond life size.
Like
and
10
I
built feet
this,
tall.
Yeah, I built this tall. One thing. It was a centaur, but I called it Swantar. It was this big alien-looking half-horse, half-man thing, and it was huge. I bet it took me, oh, my God, 4 months to make that thing. It was crazy, just little by little. So I would do the duct tape and whatever the skeleton would be of it, wood structured or whatever. But then the final coat would be like this chrome aluminum tape, and that's where that whole aluminummy came from, like they were wrapped up mummies in aluminum. And then I had their villain that I never got to make. We're going to be the Virusters. It was going to be all rusted metal, but I still haven't learned to weld good. Mm-hmm. I can do it a little bit, but I still want to do that eventually. And
so is the aluminum, this giant one, still there?
No, no. Whenever my double wide burned down back in 08, all of them, they went with it.
Wow.
I mean, it took out everything. So God, that was yeah, for sure.
Your whole thing burned down to the ground.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, all of them, everything's gone. It was crazy.
How did that start,
the fire? Electrical. It was electrical issues. That's all they could say.
Hmm.
Like some wiring issues or some shit. It, and I'd always heard about it and, you know, knew a very few amount of people that had experienced that. But, wow, that's it's a blow, man. It's when you don't have anything but your money in the bank, you know, and the love of your life. You know, it's just it was tough. But, like, we rebuilt on that same property, and it's all good now. It's just we were lucky to have Matt there. We stayed with him for a year until we got our new home built. And
did your dog pass away in the fire, too?
Yeah, Jack. And that's the old...
No! Yeah. Oh, that is the worst story I've ever heard.
Oh, yeah, and they, you know, back when we did
that...
Oh, yeah, he was trapped. And just the idea, like, what his last moments were like. He evidently passed out from the smoke, is what people say, so it probably wasn't painful, hopefully. And I just try to think of that. But the saddest thing was about a week later. And then the next day I went up there looking for his remains, just have a little closure. And, man, about a week later, one of my buddies went up there getting copper or something out. He was going to go sell it or something. But he found his remains. And I had to go up there and bury him. And, wow, you talk about.
Ooh. Oh, man.
Ooh, but anyway.
That is awful.
Yeah, it was rough. And back in the day, Matt, you know, that was a wild storyline. You know, that was all involved in the Hardy. Yeah, it was outrageous.
Wow. How did you feel when they pitched that idea?
It's very interesting, man. You know, we all know what it's like in the gorilla position before a big match or whatever. And, you know, they'll pump you up, tell you how to act. And I'll never forget the video package here. They're awesome, you know, and they're very emotional, you know. Mm-hmm. And, man, and they played that one. And Jack was in it, and like just a real sweet picture of him or something. Man, I about broke down, and they were like, "No, you got to be fired up. You got to be all." No, not today. I went out there stone cold, and I had to get over that, you know, just because I was like, "Why did I agree to do this?" You know, but it's all good, man. It played a part in all the broken stuff with the pet cemetery, because that's a real life pet cemetery I have at my house. It's where all my dogs and pets are they're buried. So we got that in that second little deal we did with the Broken Universe stuff. So. It's all good, man.
Yeah. What'd you think of that, Ambrose, the broken Hardys and all that stuff when we were watching it?
Oh, man, it's like not even outside the box. It's like outside of a different box in a different room. Like, I don't even mess with your box, man. I just do my own box. I don't get outside of that, you know? Right, that's gutsy to, like, do something that, like, is just so different. Like, and it's cool because it... Like it seems like it really got over, you know. We're sitting there in Japan watching it, like, whoa, this is cool, and like,
and not really paying attention to anything in TNA before that.
No, yeah, you can't compare it to anything else. Like, that's really cool. Like,
when did you start seeing that get over, Jeff? I mean, obviously, I know what the storyline was, where, you know, you broke your leg and all that other stuff. Were you guys just saying, like, ah, screw it, let's just do this weird thing and see what happens because we don't care anymore? Or did you obviously didn't know how big it was going to get?
I didn't know at the time until. Because Matt basically said, yeah, everything leading up to that final deletion of the matches were great. I mean, we had some, you know, great matches, and I didn't really know what Matt meant by, yeah, no, I want you to do something big to me, and I'm going to change, you know. But he watches all these shows like Dexter, Breaking Bad, you know. He loves, I think he took a little bit from all that he watches and kind of created, you know, the broken Matt Hardy deal. But after that happened, and then he started acting the way he acted, the final deletion and all that, I didn't realize it at the time, but the more he just, I started to, you know, realize how much he is consumed by this character, and just, he was fully committed. Yeah, exactly. And you have to do that. And, like, even, oh, man, we just recently did, you know, Tommy Dreamer's show. WWE was gracious enough to let us do it, and, man, what a reaction he got, and he was on point. On the mic, and he just, I mean, it's things like, oh my God, here in the House of Hardcore, Philadelphia, I mean, your reaction is almost orgasmic. and they went crazy. And we were doing a promo for some other match, and just out of nowhere, because I never know what he's going to say. And he said, "Oh my God, the joy it brings to me, and you know, thinking of the books of youth being deleted." He said something like, "When we delete the books of youth, the joy is it makes me want to ejaculate." You know, it's just the crazy shit like that, and I'm going, "Oh my God, this is nuts!" But it's so entertaining to hear him just go, because you know when I do Willow, Itchweed, these other alter egos, I mean, it's tough, man, to stay in character, especially when it's like that advanced and
Itchweed's
beyond.
Like the redneck, and Willow's kind of like
Itchweed's the weed eater guy, yeah, kind of redneck, just wild, man. And Willow's kind of the satanic, you know, demon
witchery,
devil worshiper or something. I don't know, but yeah, witchery, exactly, yeah. Something like that. And then, but yeah, I just, man, like when Matt did your podcast in full character, that was pretty impressive, you know.
He did,
like,
also,
he did this show, Ambrose, in full character for 60 minutes. Is completely the Broken Matt guy.
Oh, no way.
Which was awesome. The only other guy that's ever done it was Santino, did it as Santino for 60 minutes once. But yeah, Matt was so locked in, because very committed, like you said.
I'm going to listen to that on Drive.
Yeah, it's good. Because that's when he came up with this whole backstory, and he said that he knew my grandfather in another life. And then he goes, "Yes, he was a lumberjack." And I started laughing so hard. I kept on the mic. I was like, keep going. Yeah, so yeah. But then you talk about the total commitment of it, you know. Yeah.
Oh, I was going to say, like, you can come up with really cool new stuff like that, or anything original. A lot of times, I feel like it just comes out of just messing around. Like you were saying, did you know that was going to be good? Mm-hmm. Like, I don't know how big the plan was, but I mean, I can see you guys just like starting, like, let's try this. What if we had some drones? And then we go, let's do it in the yard. And then it just, stuff like that, you're just messing around. Like, maybe they didn't really care if it worked or not, you know?
Yeah, but
and that's when it turns out to be cool. Like,
it's always the best way. Because, like you said, Dean, I thought the drones were CGI, but those were actually
It was real,
drones.
Yeah. All miniature little drones. The ones I were hitting with the guitar, they were all, like, cheap miniature drones. And the Vanguard 1 is the, you know, expensive version, and he got so, I mean, he's the most overdrawn ever. I mean, I would walk out with him, and man, he got just this huge, oh yeah, the Vanguard 1, they would be chanting that, and just, it was insane, man. But there's something so powerful with that whole thing. But I think where I was getting with that symbol that I made out of wood, you know, and I was willing to destroy it just for the benefit of, you know, a great
segment. Yeah.
Yeah, segment. And so then I was like, oh wow, we did all this cool stuff, and the Lake of Reincarnation is in the back of my yard. And we did the Scooby-Doo finish when that, which was great. Like, I went in as Jeff Hardy, came out as Willow, you know, with the umbrella. And then Senior Benjamin took me out with the taser. But then they go back to pin Willow. Matt goes back to pin Willow, but then he takes the mask off and it's Senior Benjamin. And, I mean, it was just such a good false finish. And
Benjamin.
It was a Scooby-Doo finish.
Yeah, we should book him.
Yeah, right on. But then, so we're right into the main thing. But then I was like, okay, what do we do for this next deal? We got to, you know, top yourself. You got to raise the bar. You got to, you know, be more impressive. So that's when the Pet Cemetery came into place. And I spent like a whole week, like the same kind of wooden structure, crosses, and man, just building, went to Lowe's, bought a bunch of wood, built, cut, painted, you know, went to Lowe's, like, and built like 22 little tombstone type things. Where that drone shot looked incredible.
Oh, like you mean like in the cemetery?
Yeah. And I dug, you know, three graves I'd rented a little backhoe for my local rental company, and dug three graves because we had this idea, Senior Benjamin should be digging the graves. That'd be amazing. But it all came together so organically.
And you guys did that all on your own?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. All that, yeah.
Financed it yourself?
Oh, yeah, for sure, yeah.
So did you just deliver the finished tape to TNA and go play this?
Or yeah, basically.
Did they have to get approval for it?
Yeah, or? Everything except that the last thing we did, which is a total nonstop deletion, and it was Apocalypto. I was like, man, what if we did the volcano? You know, back in my first run here, I had the little volcano in my yard, and I jumped it with my dirt bike and all that madness. And so maybe I can build another volcano, but you can't get clay around Cameron, man. Like, Lumberton was the closest place, but luckily, a friend of mine had a place. He dug stuff out and threw stuff in, like from landscaping or whatever. And so I spent $3,000 building a damn clay volcano just to like dig a hole in the top of it. And they brought actually a pyro out there and shot nice stuff out of it and made like a big old flame out of it. And so they put a lot of money into that one, that last thing that we did. But other than that, yeah, it was all us and very low budget. But that's what makes like Final Deletion cool, because there's no budget.
Right.
So I want my first like good music video to be kind of like that. Like, just come up with a real cool Radiohead type of plan. Like, wow, I'm not sure what that means, but I love it. You know, kind of do it, yeah.
Can you imagine doing that here? Just being like, Vince, dude, I've been filming this thing at home for a few days. Here you go. Can we put it on Raw? Trust me, it's not weird. They'll like it.
Yeah. That's what it's like, gosh. Something from Adult Swim. You know what I mean? Like, it doesn't, it's like so avant-garde and so out of whack. Like, Vince would, because then didn't Vince try, didn't we try something like the next week with New Day where they went to Wyatt's?
Yeah.
I watched that. Right. Yeah, yeah.
It was kind of our version of it.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember sitting in a hotel watching that, man, and I was like, wow. This, I was excited, you know, to see how it was with the budget and everything, but I was pretty honored, I mean, in a way, you know. I was like, wow, yeah.
It wasn't as good. It wasn't half as good. It wasn't half as good. Let's be honest, right? Let's talk about Dean and the potted plant memes. Mitch the potted plant. I freaking hated that. And the story behind all the erupting on social media that it got. But before we do, you know I wouldn't be sitting here with Dean Ambrose and Jeff Hardy if not for the great sponsors who make this podcast possible. That includes TrueCar. All right, I've been talking about TrueCar since this podcast started because they really did make the car buying experience fast and easy for me. I used it to buy my Escalade last year. And TrueCar can do the same for you, whether you're looking for a brand new car or a used vehicle. With TrueCar, you get upfront pricing information so you can enjoy a better car buying experience. And when I say upfront pricing, I'm talking about real pricing on actual inventory in stock at the local certified dealer of your Schwazen. Use TrueCar on the TrueCar app because it lets you see what other people paid for the car you want so you can determine a fair price and feel confident when you buy your car. TrueCar connects you with a local certified dealer of your choosing who will honor your guaranteed savings, which makes your car buying process quicker and easier. And TrueCar also shows all of the dealers available incentives before you arrive at the dealership. TrueCar users save on average over $3,000 off MSRP, and over 3 million cars have been sold to TrueCar users by the TrueCar Certified Dealer Network. Over 13,000 dealers in TrueCar Certified Dealer Network, so there's definitely one near you. So when you're ready to buy, visit TrueCar. Download the TrueCar app to enjoy a more confident car buying experience. It's cheaper, it's easier, it's quicker. I'm telling you from experience, this is the real deal, man. I used it. I bought a car the quickest I've ever been in and out of the dealership, hour and a half, saved money, saved my peace of mind, less stress, more value, more reasons to use TrueCar. Remember, go check it out now, and some features not available in all states. All right, it's a 30-second commercial, and I'm going to throw a lot of numbers at you, okay? But please stay with me. Okay, here we go. In just 15 minutes, you could save 15% or more on car insurance. This company has been offering great rates and great service for over 75 years. Anytime you need help, you can speak to one of their trained specialists 24/7. The company is Geico. That's right. Go to geico.com today. G-E-I-C-O.com. Sorry for all the numbers, but in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1... I'm out of time.
Downsizing imagines what might happen if, as a solution to overpopulation, Norwegian scientists discover how to shrink humans to 5 inches tall and propose a 200-year global transition from big to small. People soon realize how much further money goes in a miniaturized world. And with the promise of a better life, everyman Paul Safronik and wife Audrey decide to abandon their stressed lives in Omaha in order to get small and move to a downsized community. A choice that triggers life-changing adventures. Starring Matt Damon, Christoph Waltz, Hong Chau, and Kristen Wiig. See the film Rolling Stone calls a visionary masterpiece, and Variety raves as a spectacular and ingenious comedy. Downsizing is in theaters December 22nd.
You're listening to Talk is Jericho.
Did you see, I was going to tell you this, Ambrose, did you see it was Earth Day? And there was all these memes of you holding the potted plant.
Oh, like I saw Earth, that. Yeah, I watched that just yesterday.
Did you hear anything about, what that was all about?
I didn't know until, what was it?
Ambrose holding a random potted plant. So what happened was I came back last year, January 2016. I think right off the bat, we had a highlight reel. And Ambrose is like, for real, as a shit, he goes, man, like that highlight reel set isn't it what it used to be.
You said budget cut or something.
Yeah. Well, I ended up, I grabbed a plant from backstage, just like a plant that we found, and I like brought it to him as a gift.
Yeah.
Nice. And then it stayed as part of the set.
Yeah, because you said to me, like, you said, I should bring you a potted plant or something. I'm like, yeah, bring me a potted plant. So we were in Tampa, and we walked around backstage until we found a potted plant. So he came out, because I used to have this great set for highlight reel. It'd be like this beautiful, like sculptures and a hanging Tron and a carpet with my design on it. And then here we are, 10 years later, and it's basically just two chairs and like a TV screen. And that was it.
Rain's had a stool, right?
So we jazzed it up a little bit with a plant. But then, I don't remember how it all went. But it ended up to where I had my own plant. Or maybe I took the plant.
It was
somehow I ended up with the plant.
Yeah.
But one of the writers is like, you know, you got to name the plant. And I'm like, nah, that's stupid. He's like, no, because then it, because you were going to break the plant. So he's like, that way the plant becomes like a character. And then when he breaks the plant over your head, it's like he killed Mitch.
Mitch the potted plant.
Yeah. And then you killed Mitch. But then, so at WrestleMania, they're like, hey, I want to do some photos with Mattel. And it's like the stupidest thing ever, this is the plant thing. And then like they're like, hey, we got this playset we want you to take some photos with. And it's like the whole playset with like the potted plant, and you can like break it and everything with like figures. Me and I was like, oh, we made an action figure out of the plant. He's immortalized as a toy.
Well, yeah, well, so he brought the potted plant, right? And this is when we were like, you know, on this Friends or whatever. And then every highlight reel I had, I'd put the potted plant in there. It was part of the set. And then the idea would be that we would do a highlight reel, knock him down, then smash the plant over top of his head. Which, if it, you know, if this was a real life thing and someone smashed a potted plant over your head, it would knock you the fuck out. You know, it would hurt like hell.
Right,
they insisted on calling it Mitch the potted plant. So rather than the fact that I had smashed this horrible object over his head, that he's out in the hospital for a week, everyone was more concerned with the fact that Mitch the potted plant was dead. That drove me crazy because we do this great angle. It's like, oh, poor Mitch. But no, not poor Mitch. Ambrose is in the hospital. Who cares with the stupid plant?
I
even called .com. I'm like, get that Mitch the potted plant story off of .com now. You know?
Wow.
They wanted to, they loved Mitch the potted plant. So.
Yeah, I was going to be all right, you know, but he wasn't coming back.
That's right. Yeah.
So now they actually have the Ambrose Asylum match with breakable Mitch the potted plant included.
Oh, that's awesome, man.
Once you're a toy, you can't take that away.
And that also means there's going to be another Ambrose Asylum match at some point.
Oh, God. I like just thinking of like what stupid stuff I could eventually turn into a toy.
Yeah.
My mindset is pro wrestling, man. Anything's possible, man. Anything can work.
See, I mean, if you guys had a Final Deletion here, they could make a whole Final Deletion playset with sculpture and the Pet Cemetery and the drones.
Yeah, but huge.
You'd have to.
Yeah, you would have
flying drones.
For sure. You know, oh, my gosh.
Huge. When you came back here to the WWE, we all know that, you know, we have to get into it with the story of TNA and all that sort of stuff with the contract and everything. But when you came in here, was it ever discussed of bringing that gimmick over? Or was it just, let's bring in as the Hardys and see where it goes first? Or
No, because we did the Ring of Honor pay-per-view. That's when we got the whole cease and desist letter, you know. And
say, oh, and what happened? They said you can't use it.
Yeah, they said we can't. If you use it, we're going to sue you, you know, and sue like Ring of Honor or whatever. And I think Dish Network are the only, they didn't air the pay-per-view because of the threat or whatever.
Really?
Yeah, but it was so, because it said, like, I mean, the Broken Universe characters were specifically developed for Matt and Jeff Hardy, and that was so far from the, I mean, there was
you guys developed it.
Yeah, no, and even Billy Corgan, you know, I love Billy, man.
Yeah,
and
great guy.
He was right out there with us, man, throughout two long nights of filming. I mean,
like Smashing Pumpkins, Billy Corgan.
Yeah. I mean,
he was
cool.
The head of TNA for a while
because he almost owned it, you know. And I think, I'd probably still be there now if he would have. It'd have still worked.
I wish he would have.
Yeah,
I think it would have been better for the company if he. Yeah, he was like one of the president of TNA, big investor, and actually tried to buy it.
Oh
yeah.
Wow!
Yeah,
but then something didn't work out. I mean, I don't know exactly what it was, but there was just too many uncertainties there, man.
Was he a pretty creative guy?
Yeah, he had good ideas. Yeah,
because he ran
sure.
an indie promotion. I knew that.
He did.
Chicago,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah. So, Resistance or something like that. Resistance.
Did he have some influence in the Final Deletion?
Delete or Decay. He wasn't a part of Final Deletion, but Delete or Decay he was. And he had a lot of input, man.
Hmm.
A lot of good ideas. And just like all of us, you know, we throw it out there and see if it sticks. And some were good, some didn't work. And but man, this was the one where I did my symbol in the ground. This was another big moment from a creative standpoint. I dug a trench in the ground, another kind of freehand, like I blew myself away by how I did this. And like I dug a trench of my symbol, again, the same one that burnt in the Final Deletion, and it was huge. And so we would trench it with gas, you know, in the trench, and then light it on fire so it appeared as if Vanguard 1 was shooting rockets at or lasers at Steven Abyss or whatever. But anyway, it ignited the flames and the symbol lit up like this, like God was drawing it.
Oh my god,
and Billy was out there. So I went crazy. This is like 4:30 in the morning before the big Joseph Park Lake of Reincarnation spot. But like, man, it went perfect in that drone shot, and we watched it back, and it was just man, it was awesome. But Billy was right there with all that. And he was like, well, you have outdone yourself, Jeff. And I was like, man, thank you. Man, this is what a payoff for all that hard work
you have put into it. All the stuff you're doing on your own.
So, yeah. And then when Abyss went into the Lake of Reincarnation and came out as his alter ego, Joseph Parks, which was hilarious, but he was afraid to go get all the way under that nasty ass water. And man, Billy was out there, and I'll never forget it. We were all delirious because we were so tired. And he came walking out like half wet. And the rest of him was dry because he went and shaved all up and stuff. And he said, I love how he goes in as Abyss, you know, and comes out half dry as Joseph Parks. And so I was like, this is not going to work. You're not drenching with water. But it was okay.
Yeah, I
go all the way, you know, when I do something. I've been in that nasty water too much. But, yeah, man.
Do you remember when we were in Iraq and we stayed in Saddam Hussein's palace? We had taken over. And you remember there was the football, nasty lake?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
You jumped in that lake.
Oh, yeah. I caught a pass from Ronnie. Archer.
Because they said, do not go in this lake.
Oh,
it's like
man,
toxic water. And 20 minutes later, there's Jeffro swimming in the lake.
I still have a fear that something's lingering inside, it's laying dormant in me. Like, because I was going, man, there's probably dead bodies in there. There's no telling what's
Yeah, sure.
Right. Oh, sure. But now, we were just talking about that last week, me and Truth, and he's like, damn, you caught that ball. Though. Like,
yeah, you weren't going to drop that ball. Yeah.
So stupid.
Did you ever go to Iraq? Have they stopped doing that since you got here?
No, they did the tribute just at like bases here now. That would have been cool. I would have liked to have done that.
It was a good time.
Yeah,
man.
It was, man.
We went like 3-4 years in a row.
Yeah.
Going over there, which was good. Something else I want to ask you, living out in the woods in Reynolds, North Carolina, on the forest.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And Ambrose and I have had discussions at length about paranormal, Bigfoot, ghosts, all that sort of thing. Have you ever had any weird experiences out there?
No. My wife is in love with paranormal stuff. Like, she's even got the little instruments you can take. And we went up to where my dad was born, actually, in Reynolds. That house still stands. In 1933, he was born inside that house. And it's been Itchweed's crib, and Willow's kind of made it look like his home because it's such an old, creepy-looking building. But we went up there one night doing a little investigation, and because both my aunts that lived near that have passed, and we were hoping something would happen, but nothing really powerful happened. But I think that it's very possible that something's left here as far as a paranormal. I've always wanted to see an apparition or something, but yeah, nothing
yet.
Ever powerful. I do kind of would like to experience that for sure.
Anything new on that front?
You might have caught one in that lake. Might be living in your
room. It might be. Maybe that's my problem.
Looking all crazy with the Willow mask.
Yeah.
Is he in a mask or did he really get taken over by the demon?
Right. It could be. Oh my gosh.
Dude, since we've last spoken about it, I saw a serious UFO.
Whoa. Yeah, okay.
Yeah. I'm not even making it up. I'm not saying it was necessarily an alien or a craft, but I seen something. And I, anyway, so we're in the back. I live in Vegas, right? Yes. Out in the desert, middle of nowhere. And they got Nellis Air Force Base, and it's like kind of close to Area 51. So, they say there's a lot of experimental. You know, jets and stuff like that. Yeah. So not necessarily, you know, aliens, but it was something. It was like nighttime and there was four of us out there. We had like some family over, like my girl's aunt was there and we were both facing the same direction and everybody else looking this way. And I seen this thing. It was like a circle like this that was like neon blue. And it was like in the sky and it just kind of caught my eye. And then I looked away and then kind of looked back because I noticed it was kind of moving. And it was just real deliberately moving like this. Like,
like a straight line.
Yeah, they're not making any noise or not making. It's just like this thing moving across. Like it was like something was moving across the screen.
Hmm.
And it was lingering for like 10 whole seconds because I was just like watching it like doing a double take. Like I'm looking at something, right? I had enough time to like go, yeah, that's a thing. That's what. And I'm like. In about 10 seconds, then it just gets smaller and smaller and then kind of disappears. And I turn around, I'm like, and her aunt was doing the same thing. And she's looking at it. And I'm like, did you see that? She's like, what the hell was that? And I'm like, you saw that, right? And I'm like, what? And we were comparing what we saw. We're like, yeah, what the hell was that? I don't know, man. But
so what do you think?
I have no idea. It could have been some kind of weird experimental weather balloon or some shit from the Air Force. Or it was something. It wasn't a plane. And it wasn't like
you hear about that, especially out in the desert with like the new like advanced like fighter jets and all that sort of thing that they kind of would test them over in the desert, right?
Yeah.
You hear that sort of thing, but It could also be.
Could be aliens, man. Could have been.
Yeah. There is an idea that there's hybrids like roaming around everywhere, right? Like,
in what way?
At aliens, like we're the project of the aliens, like basically.
Really?
And it's a mix of, like, not reptilian exactly, but like, you know, basically half alien, half, you know, human to where. And I've always kind of considered that. I'm a huge fan of Ancient Aliens. You know, I watch that show a lot. Speaking of, you know, crop circles, I saw a little breakdown on those a while back. But yeah, for sure. It's something, I mean, that I totally believe is very possible. That if it's not God, maybe it is the aliens. Maybe they were here years before. Maybe that's how the pyramids got built. You know, because there's so many, like, insane places you can go to and, like, wonder how that was made back then, you know, before we had all this technology and heavy machinery and all that.
But there's still something that they still don't know how they made pyramids. Like, there's still no way that you could make it. I think even to this day, you would have to have, like, you know, 4,000, you know, a forklift that could lift a 4,000-pound stone, and there's no such thing, and how they even built that.
Yeah, you can do that without a crane. Or,
without a crane?
Yeah.
You couldn't do it without a crane.
You just need thousands of years and a bunch of slaves.
But it seems so...
Still.
So, yeah, so impossible to do.
Yeah, seems, you know, a little excessive.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know? Does this pyramid really need to be this high? I don't know.
It's
taking 1,000 years we've been working on this, Bill.
Yeah.
Maybe we should just...
yeah. And, like, who's building it for 1,000 years? Like, that's a long time.
Yeah.
That's, you know, that's like 15 generations of the king. Like, he probably would lose interest at some point, you would think.
Yeah.
If that was the case. But let's talk about crop circles a little bit. Do you know anything about crop circles, Ambrose?
A little bit.
Like, what is it? What are they supposedly?
It was supposedly, it's like just aliens putting symbols for navigation or messages or something, like, in people's crops, and they, like... Mm-hmm. They push them down, and that's the extent of what I know.
I just realized they push them down. I saw the Ancient Aliens I watched. It was like they had this team of crop circle specialists to go out and make one with these things they press, and but they planned it all out with the help of drones and all this, and the size and the comparison was very close. So they did it like in 4 hours or something, and I think the challenge was to do it in under 6 or 5 or something like that. But mm-hmm. like, and I forget when that first one was discovered, but yeah, I still don't understand like how that shit just happens overnight and then it's documented that way to where, like, well, I mean, there's no explanation for this, but they made it, the team made it, and he was like, oh wow, well, it is possible for humans, but that's way different than like pyramids, you know.
Well, yeah, sure. And also about crop circles that they had, you know, 100 years ago that you would see, you
yeah know.
What other stuff did you see on Ancient Aliens?
Oh my god, Matt's actually been to Easter Island. That's another interest. There's this huge like faces built out of stone, and like another thing, like
they're
nobody,
all exactly the same.
Yeah, and nobody knows how they got there.
No.
There's like I don't know, 50 kind of like
huge
Native yeah American looking stone statues, and they're
yeah
all
oh, I know what you're talking about, yeah,
exactly
yeah
the same.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, for sure. Matt was just like, that's a magical place, and nobody really knows how they. Again, I don't know when it was structured or whatever, but
Matt actually went
Matt,
there.
Yeah, actually
where
went
is
there.
That?
It's We did shows in Santiago. You take some kind of flight from Santiago, Chile, to gotcha wherever that place is. But I don't know, man. I'm a huge believer in faith in the unknown. And I was watching, oh, my God, Charles Darwin before I came here today. Like, what a genius, man. You know, the evolution guy, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because one of the last things he said, about, I guess before his death in 1851 or something like that. But he was like... you know, basically the idea of God, how all this began, the creation of Earth and the human race, all this in general, I think it's kind of too profound for any of us to ever understand to where to me. And that's kind of how I've always been. I'm like, man, I don't need to understand. I just need to have faith. And there is something else, something more. I don't need exact details to where so many people strive to understand. But mm-hmm. yeah, that was pretty interesting to hear him say that.
Darwinism is the evolution.
Yeah, with the whole, we came from
fish
to
yeah apes
yeah
and everything in between.
Now, one thing about evolution, I mean, why are monkeys still here if that's the case?
Yeah, are they just slow?
Right, yeah, that's one thing I've never understood about evolution.
That's a good point.
Right, yeah.
You know?
So,
what's your stance on that, Dean?
I mean, I don't know anything about... I'm not smart enough to be able to say that there was evolution or there wasn't evolution. Or I got, like, you know, my own person... I'm pretty fairly spiritual. I'm like, you know, I go on like faith, but I don't subscribe to any religion or like, mm-hmm. I'm not like Noah's Ark was built and then God came into, like, I don't know. Maybe it did. Maybe it didn't. Like,
that's how I am. Yeah. Some of those stories.
Yeah.
So,
the man wrote, I mean, men wrote the Bible.
Yeah.
You know? So like,
there is some pretty fantastic things that you think could be stories, you know,
yeah,
like fiction, like fun stories that somebody wrote.
Yeah.
But I think we're on the same page. You believe that there's a higher power out there, you know? Because to me, Darwinism, to say that we came from a fish out of the sea, it's very hard to, for me to buy in that one. You know,
when he opened by, he said he'd never considered himself an atheist, which, and I was like, oh, he must have been. And I was like, oh, wow, well, that's kind of cool that you never really considered yourself that. And you are open to the fact that you'll never understand, like, until you actually die or die for good, you know. And I'm still not certain about, you know, a lot. I have a good friend of mine. He's had heart issues. He's a damn nonstop smoker. He's, I don't know, 50-something years old, but what a great, great dude. But anyway, he just will not quit smoking, and he's the kind of guy that's told me he's died about 3 or 4 times, and that might be, I mean, I'm not saying it's not true, but like, and I was like, wow, God, but to me, you know, when you die, it just seems like, but maybe there is that experience of that glimpse of what's next.
So he's died, like, on an operating table or just
from heart attacks and shit. Like,
what did he say that he saw when he died?
It's the same old thing, just like the light at the end of the tunnel, you know, and the, you know, something, you know, strange. But I have very vivid dreams, and like, they to me, it's kind of like the closest to, you know, a visit we have with that other side, the
dreaming.
Yeah, for sure, because it's basically pretty close to, I'm sure you guys experienced too, like when you're trying to like fight off somebody. Or I just had one recently. My dad had a damn heart attack, and it was very terrifying. And I was trying to get my phone to call 911, but I just could not move my body. And I was
I had that all the time.
You know what I mean? Yeah. And it was. But then there's been times when, I guess it's an experience when I control the dream, and I know that somebody's about to kill me. But I'm like, you can't kill me. This is a dream. I'm serious. Somebody's got a gun to my face, and I'm going, shoot. It's where I'm confident in my dream. But like, most of the time, I don't control it. But
have you guys ever had the famous dream of falling?
Yeah.
And I had a dream where I fell falling, and then I hit the ground and died. And they always say, if you hit the ground in your dream, you're going to die.
Well, in real life, right.
Because I hit the ground. I remember in my dream, I died from falling off this building and landing on the ground.
I'm going to sleep a little better. That's good.
Yeah. Have you guys ever had a dream like after somebody had passed away? Like that somebody, like almost like a visit? Did you guys
That's one thing when
stuff like that happens. Like,
yeah. I've had those a few times.
That's cool, yeah. It was very, you know, it was weird. And whenever psychic medium stuff kind of became popular, this was back in the first ladder match days with us and Edge and Christian. But anyway, and John Edwards, the guy, you know, you had to wait forever just to get him to read you. But anyway, and I was like, my mom, you know.
The real John, like the guy, he would actually read people?
Oh,
sign up and
But the waiting list was insane. Like, you'd have to wait 6 months.
Would he come to your house?
I think you had to go
to him.
Maybe you would meet him somewhere. I'm not sure. Terry Runnels was the first person to ever tell me about anything like that. And I was like, oh, wow, I never really dreamed about, I had dreams about my mom. You know, I was 9 when she passed. But there was this one occasion to where, oh, God, I was older. I was probably, I don't know, 22, 23, something like that. But then there was something. I just remember the word sky lifted, like the phone rang. I picked up the phone, and it was like a message from wherever the afterlife is. And it was like, so-and-so, Ruby Moore Hardy has been sky lifted, so-and-so date or something. It was something weird, but I was like.
Ruby's your mom?
Yeah. And so, and it was like, go step outside. And I stepped outside of our home that burnt, and I saw a shooting star. And to me, like, I still to this day get little chills when I see it. Something about shooting stars, man, that give me hope and faith. Even that, and I went out there, and it was just like everything was all right. That's the I've never really seen her in dreams, I don't think. But I think about the John Edwards thing is that the people close to you, like, you rarely see. But if you do, I consider that a visit for sure.
Have you ever had anything like that, Ambrose?
Yeah, like, I think just, like, there's feelings of, like, and there's like stuff tied to the universe, man, where like you can like, I feel like you can like feel energy and stuff. Like my grandfather died, who like essentially like raised me. I knew that he did somehow. Like, I knew before I'd gotten the news.
You knew they had passed away.
Somehow I knew, like, during that afternoon. I was in a developmental at the time, and like when I got, like, I had a, somehow I knew, like, he was, it's hard to explain, you know, stuff like that happens. And like, I remember one time, like I was with Renee, and like her, it was like when her grandma passed, and it was like right after, and then like this song played when we were in the car that was like somehow related to her, and like she started crying because she like thought it was just felt sign. Like it was this, like, her grandma was like, hey, play this song, because it was like an hour after she got the news. This stuff like that happens, man.
I had a dream. The first time I ever had a close friend die was this guy called Art Barr. He was a wrestler. He was called Love Machine in Mexico.
Oh, yeah.
We were really close, and he passed away in 94. I was in Mexico. He was in Mexico, but he went home to Portland. I was still in Mexico. He passed away there. And about a week later, I still remember the dream very vivid. He came and knocked on my door, and he was like, "Hey, man, I'm okay. You know, it's all good. You know, I miss you, but I'll see you. I'll see you around." You know.
Oh, wow.
And I remember that, like, vividly. And it's like, oh, it's just a dream. And maybe it was, but it was more than that.
Sure, yeah.
And then the same thing happened after Benoit passed away.
A couple days later,
he visited me too in a dream.
Well, that's
and told
spooky.
Me kind of similar things, and, you know, gave me some advice that I'll keep to myself. But it was really more than just a typical, oh, I had a weird dream. It was like, it was real.
Yeah.
Spooky. You know, it was real stuff.
Spooky.
So.
Yeah, I'm a real big believer in, like, everything happens for a reason, and, like, the universe has a plan and stuff, mm-hmm. because that's why I don't really worry about much, because... There's so many things that you thought were bad things that happened at the time, and then, like, it turns out, oh, well, if that hadn't happened, then this wouldn't happen.
Yeah, story of my life,
and
for
then,
sure. Man.
Yeah, and everything turn and, like, you meet people and things happen, and everything just kind of, you're like, damn, like, universe really does, like, have a plan for stuff sometimes, you know? So I'm big into, like, karma, too, you know? Like, you put what you put into the universe, you get back out, you know? So, like,
right.
You know, do good things for people, and, you know, don't be shitty to people, because it'll come back on you some way. Like, but that being said, I seen these flying fish on Discovery Channel or something.
Because
I mean, not that we couldn't, not saying we definitely came from fish, but these fish, they're like, they're getting chased by a shark or something, and they jump out of the water and they spread wings like birds, and they fly like 100 meters to get away from this predator, and they're like half fish, half birds.
Where do they live?
Like in the ocean. They're like flying.
It's a new species of something?
No, like apparently they've been around. Like, I've heard of flying fish, but I didn't realize, like, they really fly. Like, they get right out of the water and, like, like seagulls. And I'm like, man, evolution is crazy that at some point this fish was like, God, I keep getting eaten by this shark. We got to, let's grow wings.
And fly out of you.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
But that's what I mean. But there's a lot of that sort of stuff. And I think even just kind of to wrap up this part of the discussion, I think a lot of times people are very, not just closed-minded, but egotistical to believe that, okay, this is the only planet that has people on it, has living, you know, intelligent life forms, and that when you die, nothing happens, and that, you know, there's no such thing as ghosts, and there's no such thing as weird creatures that we've never discovered. I find that so arrogant and so, like, so stupid. How could you think that with this giant galaxy that we live in with all these different spiritual
levels?
That's
no fun either, man.
Right.
Not at all.
Yeah. I want to find a friggin' Bigfoot, man. I want that thing to exist, because that's fun. That's
Yeah,
way more fun.
Anytime there's a Bigfoot sighting, we always send the pictures to each other.
Oh, that's
and
great.
And it's usually like, you know, there's some that one in Russia that I sent you, that was pretty creepy, where that weird thing walked across the snowy road. And then there's other ones, like some Photoshop guy halfway in the river in Florida.
It's man.
You know? Have you ever heard any tales of those type of things up in North Carolina?
No Sasquatches.
No one you know has ever seen it?
Yeah. No
Gilbert
stories
never
like
saw,
that.
No tales?
He hasn't, no. If he did, he probably shot it or something. Like, he didn't even say, it's a damn big-ass bear.
You must have a lot of space up there, huh?
Yeah, we grew up farming tobacco, so we were on like between 90 and 100 acres, and so it's very cool, man, to have that land. You know, I got my motocross track, which is kind of obsolete now because I'm told I can't ride or shouldn't ride. You know?
Oh, yeah, you didn't know. You're motocross.
Yeah, I love motocross. My favorite sport of all time.
He's nuts, too, dude. He does all the tricks and hang on with his hands, with his feet in the air.
Yeah, I've seen like a clip or two of that.
Yeah, I've never, dude, that's one thing about the freestyle motocross world is just incredible, man. Talking about taking things to the next level, I just, real quick, that Josh Sheenan did a triple backflip at Travis Pastrana's compound, and I was like, no, that's not possible. Travis did one at the X Games years ago, a double backflip, and I was like, there's no way a triple backflip is possible. There's just no way. But I heard this, and I went and YouTubed it, and damn if Josh Sheenan at Travis's house, it was like the ramp was 30 feet tall. He went 100 feet in the air. If you haven't seen it, Josh Sheenan triple backflip, he does 3 backflips
while he's on the bike.
Yes. I mean, he goes about 100 feet in the air and lands it. And the rush after that, and he said he probably, you know, he never wants to do it again, because I'm sure he would have died, you know, or could have died.
Did you ever try a single backflip?
No. I've never really even done the Supermans, you know. I've just been a big jump type of guy. Like when I broke my leg, it was 100-foot triple. real sketchy that I'd built. And I'd done two other scary jumps but the months prior, but then that last one's the one that got me, man. But I had to do it. I had to see if I could make it.
So tell us what you were trying to do.
I was trying, there's a double. It was a double for the longest time, but then I get this idea, man, that's a good launch, so I can probably go another 30, 40 feet if I hit it fast. And so I built another landing, which is called a triple jump. So you can either double it or triple it or roll over the first and double the second two. And so I just, it was driving me crazy. I just had to find out, and man, I came up short, and all I remember is just seeing that I wasn't going to make it, and it was just like, you cased it. I cased it. Bam.
Basically,
and my leg just
front
snapped.
Tire in the dirt.
It's like,
that's the landing.
Yeah.
So I hit the back feet. End of it. Yeah, 100 feet, and it was like I was flying. I think it was third gear wide open or something. And, man, oh, my gosh. I thought I'd broke both my legs at first, and my buddy was filming. He's like, oh, man, you're going to be all right. You're going to be all right, man. Just chill out. Just chill out. I said, no, I can't get out. I think my legs are broken because I was freaking out. But then when they finally got my boot, I said, got to call 911 and call Dixie because we had just won the tag team championships, and I was the Omega champion. But I was riding so good until that point. Yeah. I just, for the first time in my life, I couldn't get up. And when they got that boot off, I tried to raise, and that bone tried to poke up. And I said, okay, there's the injury.
I crashed my mountain bike like a week before Mania, but it was not 100 feet.
How'd you crash yours?
Just trying to get down the hill, man.
You're actually mountain biking, like going through the hills and stuff, right?
Yeah, but it was like this kind of, you do like
rolling
up and down and, you know, more technical stuff and tricks, but it was just this really straight downhill, and I just hit a rock or picked a bad line or something and went flying like 6 or 7 feet over the handlebars and like did like a ninja roll like right back up to my feet, and I'm like doing the check like,
yeah, can I breathe?
Like, right, I'm okay, everything good? Okay.
Okay.
But I'm like, damn it, because now what you have to do is you have to immediately get back on.
Get back on the horse.
And you got to do it before you even think about it, because you can't. If you hesitate, then you'll never have any fun doing anything ever again. You got to get over it immediately. So I'm like, God damn it, this isn't a good idea. It's a week before Mania, but now I got to do it again,
just
to make sure.
Get it,
it is weird though. Like, I do a lot of snowboarding every year. I go a couple times, and dude, I used to be like, I watched some videos in my early 20s. I would take I'd take any jump. Triple black diamond, I don't give a shit. Now I stick to the greens and the blues because I don't want to fall. I don't want to take any chance of breaking anything. You know, it's like I pulled back. You never have, Jeff. You're still exactly the same guy as you were 15 years ago.
Right. Yeah, and that doing that jump that day, I was like, and I was at that, but I am kind of like that in the ring. I'm like, I'm not going to hesitate. If I'm going to do something that scares me at WrestleMania, like which is the 14-foot ladder, just to have that feeling, and because I don't want to hesitate and then get hurt on something stupid or little. Mm-hmm. But anyway, I watched some Red Bull TV and mountain biking yesterday. It was this downhill thing. It was the GoPro. And, man, he was just flipping and hitting these huge launches, and it was like the run downhill or something. But it was incredible. And even with the snowboarding, I saw some of these jumps they're making these days are just so huge.
They're crazy.
It's insane looking how massive this stuff is. But, yeah, it's nuts. Back to things happening for a reason. When I did break my leg, it's kind of cool because that's how all the broken stuff
how broken mats
happened.
Are,
yeah. So, you know, maybe there is some truth to
sure,
that.
Sure.
You know, I kind of feel in my life it feels like it.
I love the brother Nero, too. Your shoot real middle name is Nero.
Oh, yeah.
That's like the
great,
coolest
man.
Name. Like the Roman
It
emperor,
is cool,
right?
Yeah.
It's
and he's
dope.
The, yeah.
It's a dope name.
It is, man.
How did you, is this, did your parents?
My uncle, I got it from my dad's older brother. He was Nero Wilson Hardy, I think. And I was named, I'm glad I was named after him for sure. And Nero, yeah, he was the emperor that started attacking the Christians or something, right?
Yeah, he was
bad dude.
I don't know. I think is when Rome started burning or something, wasn't Nero?
Yeah, the fiddler that played the fiddle.
Like
that's
that?
All I know about him, basically. Yeah. And
something along those lines.
But yeah, it's cool to hear people chant even here. So hopefully one of these days I'll get to emerge as
Brother Nero.
As the Brother
I'd be
Nero.
Brother Keith.
Yeah. Brother Keith. That's pretty smooth.
Oh, I don't know.
What's your middle name?
Oh, David.
Brother Dave.
Brother Dave and Brother Keith.
Brother Dave and Brother Keith don't have the same ring.
Not nearly as cool.
Oh, man.
Those
two nerd brothers, David and Keith.
Losers in the back. Hey, Nero, can we hang with you? So, Jeff, just as we start winding down here, how was it for you coming back to the WWE? I mean, it's been 10 years?
No, for me, seven. I left in 2009. Okay, I think seven. Yeah, right, seven. it was one of those things that was inevitable. I think when I did JR's podcast live at like the House of Blues back at a couple of WrestleCons ago, that was the big question. Are you ever going to return? And then I was like, oh, yeah, I mean, it's inevitable. I'm not sure how it's going to come about, but I always knew it, mm-hmm. you know, deep down. Like, now I kind of know what that extended family means. Even back in the day, I remember, you know, they said, oh, yeah, you know, we want you to be a part of the extended family. So, yeah, just, I mean, it was inevitable and meant to be in some weird way. And just how it all happened was the perfect story mm-hmm. From the Expedition of Gold to becoming the WWE Tag Team Champions. I mean, it was the perfect story.
They kept it a good secret, too. I didn't hear anything about it from anybody. You know?
Yeah. I kind of had heard rumblings and stuff, but I had no idea that you guys would be actually at Mania. Tell us about that. Where were you hiding? What was the deal?
It was, you know, we did everything leading up to WrestleMania Day, even the signing beforehand for like 5 hours at some, it was the Broken Tailgate Party, they labeled it. And
on the day of WrestleMania?
Oh, yeah.
You did a five-hour signing before the show?
Everything made it work.
Do that, man.
Oh, man, it was nuts. But then Friday night, you know, Friday we did the long signing and pictures and all that. And Saturday with Ring of Honor, because we did WrestleCon Friday night, Ring of Honor Saturday night. And that ladder match with the Young Bucks was insane, you know. I think I went
How did you like working with those guys?
Oh, love it. Love it. They're I mean, so ahead of their time.
Have you worked with them at all, Dean, with the Young Bucks?
Yeah.
They're pretty good.
Yeah, once or twice.
Yeah,
they're cool. They're good.
Very acrobatic and creative. And
yeah, man. I'm pretty sure. I know I went through two tables, and we broke about eight altogether, and I took at least.
This was Saturday night?
Before Mania. Yeah, so I took at least.
Two ladder matches in a row?
Yeah. Oh, nice. Man. And this one was like a 30-minute. It was pretty intense, man. Those
it was
guys,
a Ring of Honor ladder match.
Yeah, they go off, man. And I didn't have hardly no offense, I don't think, at all. I was just taking super kicks and going through tables.
And Meltzer drivers.
And Meltzer drivers, yeah. And we brought the seesaw spot. We just saw Christian the day before yesterday, at Tommy Dreamer's show.
Okay.
And it was cool to, you know, reconnect with him. Sure. He's a great guy.
Same as
hilarious.
Always. Super
oh, yeah.
sarcastic.
For sure.
Rarely but
we
smiles.
We brought the seesaw spot back, and he basically, we went into it a different way, where I took a super kick. We do this up and over spot, super kick. It's awesome. I'm down. Feed over to the seesaw. Nick just springs over and does the Xbox gimmick, you know, where he just sits down and,
yeah.
But he throws the ladder down and knocks me crazy.
Did it catch you?
No, I protected myself.
You got to be careful with that, man. I lost two teeth with that.
Yeah, it's dang, like Joey Mercury. Shot. Yeah, Joey Mercury had a bad experience.
Oh,
you remember?
Oh, the Mercury face thing is the worst.
Yeah. I remember he filleted his face, ooh, basically.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, blood was everywhere.
That's on that seesaw spot.
Yeah, for sure, man. But yeah, I got my hands up there, and it was great. But yeah, all that, the whole month of March, basically, you know, because we knew after our contracts expired with that other world, basically, we knew. We'd already, you know, been through all the deal we had to go through, and we just had to keep it a secret, you know, and that was so hard. Like, that day of WrestleMania, I was just lying like crazy. Well, we gonna see you tonight? No, I'm getting on the first flight out of here to Reynolds, you know? And, man, even, like, interviews Friday, Saturday before, like, with these people, like, I even said, oh, yeah, we're going to be in Ring of Honor through the summer. I'm going to talk to them about doing a rock show with them. You know, I was just saying all kinds of crazy
throwing shit out there, right?
Yeah. And, but, you know, it's kind of like a good surprise birthday party is the way I look at it. You know, sometimes it's okay to lie in that manner.
Yeah. But it was a huge reaction. I was watching with Samoa Joe. We were out in the crowd just because we wanted to hear it, and it was crazy.
Yeah.
When they played your old-ass music.
Old-ass music, yeah.
Oh, how dope is that music, too?
Oh, my gosh.
I love that music.
Yeah.
Your reaction was like, what did you say?
That old-ass music. I can't believe we had to go out to that old-ass music, but I get it.
And you're probably sick of it by now because you had to listen to it for 20 years.
Oh, my God. And plus, I've seen
like
it on
the best songs, though, dude.
And on Ghost Hunters, I've seen it. I've seen it on all these other kind of shows. You know, what do you call that music? You know, you can just use.
Wow, wow.
Yeah.
Music,
I think it's they use it as bed music maybe or bumper music.
Yeah, I've heard on a lot of different things, but it still works because it kind of originated with us. I guess.
See, for you guys, you're thinking, okay, it's the old music. For people here, like even me and Ambrose, were like, oh my gosh, I haven't heard
this.
It
is
so
great,
long.
Exactly. It's exciting.
Back, it's like when you hear, you know, Sexy Boy, or you hear like Kurt Angle's theme. Like when you see it in the arena live, it's like, oh my gosh.
Yeah. Oh yeah,
music's a big deal, man. It's important.
It really is.
Sure, yeah.
You have to have the right song, you know. And I understand you saying that, Jeff, because you haven't come out to it for so long.
Right. But I get it. I'm not totally getting it. And watching it back, it was perfect. I mean, seeing the symbol and I mean, it was great. New Day coming out there was great.
I don't know if you would agree, so I'll ask you. But would you think that because you guys had all the success doing the, you know, killing each other on the farm and all that. But I think ultimately you think like the people, they don't want to see the Hardy Boys fight. They like the Hardy Boys together.
I think so, yeah.
Because there's some things like that where like, you know,
I agree.
Yeah, you wouldn't want to see Ricky and Robert fighting.
Yeah.
It just would feel weird, you know?
Yeah, for sure.
And that happened when you guys did work each other in WWE. I remember it never really, not that it didn't get over, but it was never the same, like, the reactions were never like, ah.
Yeah, because the bottom line is people really don't want to see that. I mean, it's cool for us, like Brett and Owen wrestling each other. Usually we love that. And naturally for us to get to do that at Mania, you know, back in the day, that was, it was awesome. But yeah, that's the bottom line. People really would rather see us together instead of, you know.
Talking about music, did you have any input in your music, Ambrose, when you came to the WWE?
No, we, I think I scanned through a few different ones, like when I was in developmental and picked one or two. But when we did like the Shield, we were just told them kind of what we were thinking.
Mm-hmm.
And what's his face guy wrote something. And then we did the
what's his face guy?
You know,
Jim Johnson.
Yeah, yeah.
Is that guy?
And then we did like the voiceovers for it with the Sierra Hotel,
which was
pretty cool.
Alpha, Beta,
Omega. And then when I got the music I have now, I just was in the ring one day. I was beating somebody up or running somebody off, and then they played this music, and I'd never heard it before. And I'm like, "Do I have new music now? What the hell? I guess
me.
I do." I don't know. I think I like it.
It's good. Yeah
it's like. It's got a good first, like, 4 seconds, and that's the most important part.
Yeah, people know for sure they hear that.
The breaking glass, break the walls down. if you smell what The Rock is cooking, that sets the tone for the entire rest of the song.
Oh, yeah.
How's it for you being back on Raw?
It was a little weird. I'm very getting used to SmackDown, man. Like, I did not expect to be switched. I'd heard there were going to be some people switched, and I was like, that's not going to be me. I was in Utah. I was telling you I was hiking in Utah, and when I was going to be there till like Sunday or whatever, and I got called and had to leave and fly in early to do it. I was like, out of nowhere. Yeah, I was like, I'm going to Raw? No way. Like, I thought I was just SmackDown guy. I didn't know.
And it really is like two separate companies. Like, it's like, I haven't seen you. I mean, we worked, every day for 3 months.
Yeah.
I haven't seen you in like 6 months. Or Miz or AJ, same thing. And it's just, it really is like, dude, how are you?
I was pretty happy with what we were able to do on SmackDown. It was like one of the best, most fun runs of my career. Because it was like, it's essentially a new show. Because now it's live on Tuesdays. So it's a new show and a new, even though it's still SmackDown, it's like a new thing.
Mm-hmm.
And it was live and it was kind of a new roster. So like, we started doing house shows on Mondays and we built it from like, we literally have seen the houses rise every night, you know, like. And
the ratings too.
Yeah, I guess. So like, we kind of built it into something that was cool, and I think everybody over there took like an ownership in it. I know I did. And I was like, blue team. Cool. So, you know, let's move on to the next chapter in the book. You know, but it was a good run.
I got one last question for both of you, Dean. Tell me about the when we did the angle where you tore up my jacket.
Oh, I tore that thing up.
It was fun though, because I remember. So I had the lighted jacket, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I noticed these kids in the crowd would have them. So where are they getting them? So they were getting from this company in India. And they cost $500. The real jacket costs about 10 grand, although I say 15 grand, but it just costs a good chunk of change.
Right, right.
So I bought one and I just kept it in my house. Like someday someone will rip this up. And I was supposed to work with Oos, with Roman, and then that got switched to you and I. I was like, oh, it's even better for Ambrose to rip the jacket.
Yeah.
So I pitched it to Vince, and he was like, oh, it's great, it's great, it's great. So then we actually go and do it, and tell us a little bit. You had to walk out in the dark, or what did you have to do?
What did we do? Your music hit, and I came out with the jacket, and I just did the Jericho entrance.
Yeah.
But you were already out there and saw me, something like that. But it was kind of cool because I got to, like, do the full Jericho entrance, and everybody thought I was Jericho, so it was like, oh, cool. Like,
and they wanted you, like...
Yeah, it's like going to Chris Jericho... fan camp. Be Chris Jericho for a day.
That's pretty cool. Wanted him to do cartwheels down the apron, down the rampway in the jackets, just to show, because the jacket's lit.
Oh, wow. Like,
have him do cartwheels. But we were scared because the jacket was like kind of turning off and on.
Oh, it was very, it was very,
very
rigged,
cheap.
Very cheap rigged together.
Yeah.
So I was like, I don't even know if I can do cartwheels.
Cartwheels.
It's a bad idea.
Oh, but, man.
Yeah, it was cool. I thought it was funny before we even did it. I was just thinking of you just yelling, "You owe me $20,000, Ambrose. You owe me $20,000." And for some reason, that just cracks me up.
You love that.
I love it. I was like, we have to do it now.
You love the drink it in, man.
Oh yeah.
The 69 tax. We did a lot of shit, man. We did a lot of stuff.
Oh yeah. Yeah, working on your house shows, you crack, like, it's so hard because you crack me up so much. 69 texts! Faces all scrunched up, yelling at me.
Ambrose Asylum match is like a cage match, all these gimmicks and stuff hanging from it. And Ambrose wanted to do thumbtacks, right?
Yep.
And you pitched it to Vince and pitched it to Vince, and finally he approved it.
Yeah, finally I went into his office. And would not leave until he just agreed.
Until he agreed.
I was, he can't be like, no. I'd be like, come on.
So he's,
no, come on. No, come on.
How did you finally convince him?
I literally just wouldn't leave. I just kept going, come on. And I was like, they're safe. They're stupid. I was like, Vince, these marks, they're stupid. They love them. Guys like me and you, we're smart. We know it's safe.
Well, you're right.
Finally, he was just sick of me being in his office. He was just like, Jericho okay with it? I'm like, yeah, loves it. His idea. Fine.
Like, so then I'm thinking like, okay, well, listen, dude, you want to go on the thumbtacks? Do it. You'll go for it, man. Good on you. And then when he gets the approval, the finish of the match is him going over. And then I'm like, well, he can't go on the thumbtacks and win. The thumbtacks has to be the worst thing. You get thrown in thumbtacks, you're done.
Right.
So then I realized, holy shit, I have to take the bump in the thumbtacks. Oh. It's the only way. Yeah. It's the only way.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh my gosh, this is just ridiculous.
Yeah, I really screwed you over there, didn't I?
Yeah, thanks a lot, buddy. But it was one of the things, I'd never taken a bump in the thumbtacks. Never have. Never do it again.
Really? Wow.
But I'm glad I did. It was pretty scary, the thought of it, more than actually taking it. It was
they're nothing.
It wasn't. I mean, it hurts, but it's not bad.
Yeah, yeah.
But the thought of it, like when you had me, I went for the code breaker and you caught me, you're going to slam me down. I was like, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God. Yeah. It's like you're going to jump into a cold lake. And as soon as you jump in, it's like, ah!
We don't get to have those moments as much. I love those, like, that feeling right before you're about to do something really dangerous. Like, you don't have that as much in WWE because everything's very safe. Even when we do the stunts a lot of times. If it's not something that's, like, super high, you know, you don't get that, like, feeling of, like, oh, God, this is really going to hurt.
Yeah, right. Yeah,
which
yeah.
is an addictive feeling, even though
for sure, yeah.
getting hurt sucks. But it's, you know what I mean?
Right. When like you got that, too, Jeff. I mean, you said that earlier, WrestleMania, you had to do the one moment where it was, like, breathtaking, possibly dangerous. You know, you still get
a feel from that. Yeah, there's a huge difference between, like, chemical dependency, addiction, and then there's pro wrestling addiction. There's a difference. Because as Matt has tripped me out with his, you know, basically he... at one point controlled my addiction of being my spot monkey syndrome, basically, because deep down I am kind of a spot monkey. I really don't even know how to wrestle. I just do stunts, you know, but yeah,
a spot monkey.
Oh man. But yeah, the way he says you indulge in your addiction. Sometimes he would let me and sometimes he wouldn't, but yeah, big difference.
When you work with Claudio last week, that was like one of the first times I seen, like, especially on Raw, like everybody was around the monitor in the mm-hmm. locker room. Like everybody was like, "Oh man,
yeah, we were excited.
Jeff
to see
and
that.
Cesaro, I want to see this." And I was like, "I stuck around. I was like, I kind of want to see this. I was done."
Yeah, he's intimidating, man. He's like a freakishly athletic dude. And just working with him on the house and then the singles matches.
Oh yeah,
man.
Doesn't it piss you off? You're just like, "Yeah, are you like, so
exact running up the ropes.
We even the same species,
right?
Yeah. And even we were in China, and there's a ping pong table, and he gets a ping pong. He's like the best ping pong player." He's like the best athlete in anything. He can jump, he can run, he can swim, he can do springboards, he can play ping pong. I was like, I hate you.
He's got specially designed, you know, maybe one of those alien hybrids.
Totally. Yeah. Jeff, just lay it on me. I know you got a pair of
Cesaro's a reptilian.
Reptilian. Yeah.
Flashy eyes.
I knew we were going to come up with something.
See, that's what it was.
There we go. Oh my God.
It's gelling. Gelling. Tell us about Paroxygen. After all these years of being in the band and kind of dabbling in it, now you guys have a record coming out.
Yeah, for sure. Procession of the Equinoxes will be out end of May. I just finished typing up all the lyrics, all strange, on my phone. Normally, I would write the lyrics with my handwriting and do all these little sketches, but it takes so long to do it real neat, you know. Mm-hmm. So this time I typed it on my phone and just sent them off. So yeah, we're real close, and there's 14 tracks. It's the longest album I've ever done, you know, and it opens with a spoken word, very afterlife-ish, you know, type of deal, and then ends with a very kind of dark spoken word. So it opens with spoken, ends with spoken, and the in-between is like from everything. I mean, it's a roller coaster of emotion. I mean, from the dark and then light, and it's got a little bit of everything, and I'm extremely proud of it. It took a while for this one, but yes, our third band album, and I just can't wait for it to get out there.
What
be
kind of tunes is it? Is it more moody
abstract
stuff?
Rock. Doors. I can see it's very alternative. You know, basically my biggest influence is, you know, Pearl Jam, Tool, Mance, and Stone Temple Pilots, that kind of thing. But yeah, it's very modified. I think I've kind of found my way. I'm still trying to control that voice a little better because, you know, I did my first live show last March and outside of Nashville, and it went good. I blew my voice out the Friday before. I think I told you about this, and I respect you guys so much how you tour and, like, keep your voice healthy. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but now I know what not to do, and that's just rehearse, you know, not rehearse too hard. But anyway, I was way comfortable on stage, which made me feel great. I was like, I was way more comfortable than I would be cutting a wrestling promo. Oh, it just felt that natural.
Yeah.
So that excited me. So hopefully there's a lot more to come after this album gets out. And
want to do some more touring, you mean?
Oh, for sure. Yeah. And just a show here and there, you know, basically.
I want to hear it. I bet it's trippy music, huh?
It is, man. Yeah, it's like trippy. I don't know if it's
Nine Inch Nails kind of?
Yeah. Oh, Nine Inch Nails, a huge influence. Love Trent Reznor, man.
That's kind of what I picture. If I was
for sure. Yeah. And then my producer's son is into that EDM electronic music, and then there's some of that thrown in there too, like with some of the rock, and it's got a unique sound. I think it's very different. So yes, our third one, and hopefully it's our best one yet. Mm-hmm. And it'll be available at jeffhardybrand.com
we'll pump
soon.
It when it comes out for sure.
Yeah, for sure.
Paroxygen.
We'll jam it on the Babyface bus.
Yeah, there we go. Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
See, now you guys are friends now. You can sit on the back of the bus with each other.
Yeah. What does peroxygen mean? What does it mean? Well, I don't know. I don't think it really means anything. Here's what it means. It's kind of like pure oxygen. It's just spelled differently because I was looking at a peroxide. I'll never forget. I was on the toilet again, not hearing in conversation, but I saw a peroxide bottle. I said, that's something cool about peroxide, that word. And it cleans wounds and everything. And what if I took that letter in oxygen and did the word Y instead of the letter Y? So that's basically where it came from. And then throw in a question mark as to who knows.
Classic Jeff Hardy.
Yeah, for sure. Me and Darwin, man, we're on the same page. Yeah. Even in his afterlife. Yeah.
You ever been in a band, Ambrose?
No.
No?
No.
Not even in the back? When you're a kid? Tambourine?
No. I think in like third grade, I tried to play one of them percussion things and just kind of like, I don't have the attention span for, like, I don't have the rhythm, like, I can't figure it out.
It's brutal. Can you play the guitar?
Guitar, bass, drums, rhythms of them, but nothing great. But I can hammer out demos if I have to.
Yeah, same issue with me. I feel so uncoordinated, man. I mean, I can play a few chords, but I can never, like, play the whole song and sing at the same time. It's just, I just need to stick with it more.
Yeah, stick with the singing. Yeah. You got the vibe too.
Yeah.
So
yeah, for sure.
I'll stand by the stage and just jam.
There's no karaoke deals on the network these days. I mean,
they should.
Yeah,
they should do a karaoke show on the network.
Yeah, a lot of people love that, man. Yeah.
Well, there you go, dudes. We got to meet to you, Jeff Hardy, Dean Ambrose, first time ever. I think now we have to go do some kind of stupid meeting about apps for our phone or something.
Oh, great! Another app. All right, the world needs that. Okay.
Yeah. Thanks, boys.
Cool. Thank you, dude.
All right, so Jeff Hardy's band Paroxygen has a new album coming out July 17th. The album is called Precession of the Equinoxes, classic Jeff Hardy use of verbiage, and you will be able to get it at jeffhardybrand.com, jeffhardybrand.com, and I think you're going to dig it. In fact, we're going to play the first single for you right now, the world premiere of Paroxygen's new single. This is called Revived.
Come on with the ocean. We'll live off love and poetry up in motion. We'll know the stars and everything that we've lived for. We'll save the day and find the journey to explore. We'll die in time when the time is right. Until then we'll live a hell of a life. We'll live fearless until the time feels wrong. Until then we're gonna carry on like we've never lived before. Fight
the hate we must endure. Like we've been reborn again, searching for the unique blend to resolve when times are down. I will always be around, knowing you are by my side. For when I need to be revived, we'll fly around and become one with peacefulness. We'll live off love and all the strength to reminisce. We'll know the world and everything that we wished for. We'll save ourselves and review memories since born. We'll die in time when the time is right. Until then, we'll live a hell of a life. We'll live fearless until the time feels wrong. Until then, we're gonna carry on. Like we've never lived before. Fight the hate we must endure. Like we've been reborn again. Searching for the unique blend to resolve when times are down. I will always be around, knowing you are by my side. For when I need to be
like that song. At first I didn't know what direction it was going, but I text Jeff right after. That's a really cool song, and congratulations to Pair Oxygen. I'm looking forward to getting the album. jeffhardybrand.com, you can get it July 17th. It's called Procession of the Equinoxes. That was revived, so get ready for Pair Oxygen. Maybe there should be a Fozzy Pair Oxygen tour. That might be cool. jeffhardybrand.com for all information on Pair Oxygen and all things Jeff Hardy. Great guy. Thanks to Jeff, and thanks to Dean Ambrose. What an awesome experiment this was today. I'm really glad that we did it. Very good guys, close friends, great workers. Very, very cool. But before we wrap things up, we got to hear this week's important headlines according to Team Tiger Awesome.
This is the news with Team Tiger Awesome. In Vegas news, a man is suing Planet Hollywood Hotel and Casino, claiming he was injured scampering away after being surprised by a mannequin in his room. Named as co-defendants in the lawsuit along with the hotel is Darkness itself and the concept of danger. A giant luxury car dispensing vending machine has been built in Singapore. Customers can buy fly whips from the machine, such as classic Ferraris and newer Ferraris, while the objects that truly fill an emotional void, like love and respect, are still sold in a separate Singapore vending machine. And now, a check on the nickname markets. Lillin opened the day just behind Big Mac, Sprucey Brucey held steady, Spanky Sword, Bob Zombie surged, Pork Chop dipped, and Derp 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 hit a surprising all-time high. For more unfortunately useful news, listen to the Team Tiger Awesome show every Sunday on the Jericho Network on Podcast One.
Who needs fake news when you can get Team Tiger Awesome's fake news every Sunday on the Team Tiger Awesome show, the podcast? Go subscribe at Apple Podcasts. Be sure to leave them a 5-star rating and review. Leave all the Jericho Network podcast 5-star ratings and reviews. They're all doing a great job. All of them. Killing the Town with Storm and Cyrus. Really coming together. Great intellectual conversations about all things psychological wrestling. They have great stories about touring India this week. Rock Talk with Mitch LaFon. Wow, what a great conversation he had with Bruce Kulick about Revenge 25. Another one this week with John Karabi, the guy who replaced Vince Neil and Motley Crue and was unceremoniously dumped. Great stories about that. John is currently with the Dead Daisies. The Raven Effect, Raven taking a trip down memory lane, telling his history, his origin, Portland Championship Wrestling, Florida Championship Wrestling, Memphis. Go check that out for some great stories with Raven. He's off his rocker, but he's a lot of fun. And then my favorite, keeping it 100 with Conan, a magazine, a cornucopia, a cacophony of just ridiculous guests and commentary. I love this show. Continue to support it. And of course, Beyond the Darkness, 5 days a week. What a great combination of paranormal, scary guests. And speaking of Beyond the Darkness, their new podcast, True Crime Tuesday, is out now. Every Tuesday, but you can only get it by signing up at patreon.com. That's $5 a month, but you'll get a new episode every Tuesday, and all of the episodes are ad-free, no commercials at all. So get to patreon.com, get in on True Crime Tuesdays for just $5 a month. Okay, and one last big thank you to this episode's tremendous sponsors and to all of you for supporting them. I'm talking about DDP Yoga. Go to ddpyoga.com/Jericho to get 20% off all DDP Yoga Now merch and the DDP Yoga Now app, 20% off ddpyoga.com/Jericho. True Car, go check that out to get a cheaper car buying experience. It's quicker, it's better. Geico, you'll save money on insurance. So many other great sponsors, but thank you for listening. Keep listening for the 60-second AP News headlines coming up next. And next Wednesday, wow, this one is legendary. I'm talking one-on-one with the legendary Bruno Sammartino. Okay, you're talking about the biggest stars in WWE history. You got The Rock and Steve Austin. You got John Cena. You got Hulk Hogan. But predating all of them, the pioneer, the guy who set the tone, Bruno Sammartino. And he would only do this podcast if I met him in his favorite Italian restaurant in Pittsburgh. So that's where we did it. Emanates from this amazing Italian restaurant. Bruno Sammartino, he's going to be here. Wow, what a legend. You guys are going to love this conversation from one of the true greats of the sport for over 50 years. So we'll see you on Wednesday. In the meantime, and in between time, stay hard, stay hungry. Peace, love, and hugs, and a big yeah, boy!
You can download new episodes of Talk is Jericho every Wednesday and Friday at podcastone.com. That's podcastone.com.
You're listening to Love Advice with Leanne. Caller, you're on the air.
Hi, Leanne. Long-time listener, first-time caller. Why, in your professional opinion, do you never take my calls off the air?
Is this Carl?
Yep, it's Carl. I mean, we had a few dates. Everything was great, I thought.
Well, you know, when you switch to Geico, you could save a lot of money on car insurance.
Okay, awesome.
You should call them.
I will.
Geico, because saving 15% or more on car insurance is always a great answer.
It's your last chance to get great holiday savings at Guitar Center. Like a Yamaha F335 acoustic guitar, just $99. Or get a Luna Soprano ukulele, only $49. Plus, the newest and hottest guitars, drums, keys, and more. Exclusive gear you can't get anywhere else. Special financing. Lessons for the beginner on your list. And gift cards, the perfect present for every musician. So hurry in and find your sound at Guitar Center.